We began the season of Advent and Christmas 6 weeks ago, if you can believe it. Only 6 weeks, if you can believe it. We lit the first Advent candle. We sang only verse one of Hope is a Candle. And we considered Margot's art, there it is, inspired by that theme, entitled A Candle in the Dark. That Sunday, I talked to you about Scrooge, about seeing signs, and about becoming the hope that, like a candle, fills the darkness. And now we arrive at the final Sunday of this season, the season of Advent and Christmas, on which I am privileged to speak to you again and to share the art of my other child, carrying again images of light, making the way clear. Technically, the Advent and Christmas season ends tomorrow with Epiphany, or the day after the 12th day of Christmas, which is today, though Jake and I were talking, I don't know where 12 days of Christmas comes from. But as many traditions do, we are marking Epiphany today, on the Sunday closest to Three Kings Day, which always falls on January 6th. And it marks the visit of the wise men to the child Jesus. Epiphany, liturgically speaking, is not just one day, but actually the whole season spanning up to 9 weeks, depending on when Lent starts, but always ending with what is called Transfiguration Sunday, or the Transfiguration of the Lord Sunday, depending on your tradition. The lectionary readings for that Sunday often include Old Testament readings depicting Moses and the cloud of God, and most certainly include one of the three gospel stories of Jesus going up on the mountain and communing with Moses and Elijah, followed by the proclamation by God of Jesus as his son, the final revelation of Epiphany. But that day is weeks away, at the other end of Epiphany, and we are just starting our journey of revelation. We see today the first revelation of Emmanuel, God with us. At Christmas, we experience the humanity of Jesus revealed in the tiny, helpless newborn baby. But at Epiphany, we are shown the divinity of the Christ. The visit and gifts from the Magi, let's say there's three, we don't really know, but the gifts recognize the divinity of Jesus among the Gentiles as well as the Jews. The Magi, after all, were not Jewish. They have journeyed from the East, generally thought of as Persia, or what we would think of today as the regions around Saudi Arabia and Iraq. So these Arabic people, of indeterminate number, have come following a star. First, they visit Herod, because the star leads them initially to Bethlehem. Let's remember that despite the nativity Photoshop, as Caleb likes to call it, that places the wise men at the stable, the arrival of the Magi is considered to be around 2 years after Jesus' birth. So while the star leads the wise people initially to Bethlehem, when they leave Herod's abode, verse 9 tells us the star continues to lead them, most likely to Nazareth in Galilee, where Joseph and Mary no doubt returned following their registration in the census 2 years previous. The wise men follow the star to the child Jesus and bow down and deliver their prophetic gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh, marking this child as king and divine priest, but also foreshadowing his death, holy God, but also fully human. The visit of the wise men, the first Gentiles to worship Jesus, reveals to the world the recognition of Christ's divinity beyond the people of Israel, an important epiphany indeed. And then, their worship completed, they leave, but they go back a different way to avoid Herod, who has already ignored the information they have given about Jesus' divinity and chosen instead to concern himself only with the potential threat the child could pose to Herod's own power. We are told that Herod is informed by his own prophets and scribes that the child the wise men are seeking is the Messiah. But as many who hold authority do, Herod does not see with the eyes of prophets or peasant shepherds. He sees only with eyes corrupted by power. He does not see how the visit of these men from afar aligns with the words of Isaiah that we read today. Nations will come to your light and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Here, these kings have come to bear witness and acknowledge the glory of the Lord coming among the people of Israel, and Herod cannot see past his own ambitions and desires. It is a story that we see played out throughout the Gospels when those in power resist the turning of the wheel that Jesus sets in motion, even to the point of forcing his brutal death. But the words of Isaiah are giving a different instruction, telling the people to arise and shine. In his Midrash on this section, Yaakov Brown, a modern leader of a messianic Jewish group, points out that the preceding chapter, Isaiah 59, gives the indication that the words are being spoken to the descendants of Jacob, and that the words arise and shine are both verbs of action. The people of God are being charged to get up and let the light that has been delivered to them, the Messiah, shine out for all humanity to see, so that all will come to know the redemption offered through the child of the people of Israel. But on Epiphany, when we see the recognition of the divinity of Jesus in the gifts of the Gentile wise men, we can perhaps see more clearly how this charge can be extended to those who have chosen to follow the babe of Bethlehem. That those of us who have seen the Messiah's birth with the eyes of prophets and peasants are called to rise and shine, drawing all the world to the light of Jesus. Being the light on the hill is, of course, no easy task. One of my favorite post-Christmas hymns, "I Am the Light of the World," begins with the following verse: "When the songs of the angels are stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and the shepherds have found their way home, then the work of Christmas has begun." The work of Christmas, as laid out in the song, includes the work of making the powerful care, a task that we see in the Matthew verses today and again throughout the gospel can seem almost impossible. We ourselves can often get bogged down in our earthly lives and lose ourselves in the struggle for power and position. As I wrote the words of confession for this series, I was challenged to put into writing the ways that we as humans are prone to missteps and errors in our following of Jesus. And we all know there are many. But I was also blessed to write the words of forgiveness, an opportunity to remind myself and all of us that even when we stumble, God is there. God is waiting to remind us how to be the light on the hill. The words of forgiveness from last week actually take issue with the verse of the hymn that I just mentioned, suggesting that the angel's songs will not be stilled, but will continue to herald the good news that is for all the people in Jesus. God will make sure that we can be reminded of the good news always. I would like to suggest that the star in the sky is also not gone, that God has given us a way for that star to keep shining also, though perhaps no longer from above. Natalie's art for this morning presents a beautiful representation of what I'm suggesting. Look, there it is. Natalie's art was in part inspired by the words of the final verse of In the Bleak Midwinter, written by famed poet Christina Rossetti in 1872. "What can I give him, poor as I am? If I were a shepherd, I would give a lamb. If I were a wise man, I would do my part. Yet what can I give? What I can, I give him, give my heart." While the kings and shepherds have given their gifts to Jesus, the gift that we can give, even centuries later, is our hearts. However, the words of Isaiah challenge us to do more than just give our hearts to Jesus, but to let our hearts be filled with light, still guiding the people to Jesus, just as the Christmas star did so long ago. In Natalie's art, the hearts of all the people, the kings, the shepherds, and everyone on the path to and from Jesus, are shining reflections of the light of the Holy Star. When we give our hearts to act as vessels for the Holy Light, our focus can change from what gift can I give Jesus to what gift can I give from Jesus to a hurting world. The children's feature that we heard today talked very literally about what it means to bring light to those in situations where darkness can be life-threatening. But we all know there are many ways to bring light into the darkness. The hymn, "I Am the Light of the World," includes among its list the lists of works of Christmas, Not only broad and difficult tasks like making the powerful care and rebuilding the nations with strength and goodwill, easy things, but small everyday works like dancing at a baby's birth and feeling the earth below and the sky above. So on First Advent, I brought the challenge for us to be like Scrooge after the transformation and be the sign of hope to those we encounter. Today, I bring you another challenge. I challenge you to let your hearts be made light, to give, poor as we each are, your heart over to the call of the prophet to shine and draw the nations to the light of the world. Be like the Magi, who, following the star to Jesus, left the encounter by a different way, their plans changed by the revelation of God made flesh. As you go about this new year, I invite you to bring the work of Christmas to everything. Bring hope to every task you do, as the hymn suggests, by continuing to hear the songs of the angels and knowing that the light of the star is not gone, but now shines out from you, beloved of God. In the name of the Creator, the Christ, and the indwelling Spirit.